Okay, so first of all, let me apologize for Friday. I had a booster shot Thursday afternoon, and I had a fever of 101 on Friday. But yeah, boosters can be as bad as the real thing, I think. But anyway, I'm recovered. I'm wearing a mask simply just to be on the safe side. But we should be good to go today. So today I'll deliver Friday's lecture. Last week, what we had been working on is how to compute determinants. What you're going to see today is the first application of our ability to compute determinants. The very important problem in linear algebra and its applications, the eigenvector, eigenvalue problem. To give you some context for this, there are many problems in applications that don't look like they have anything to do with linear algebra at all, but nevertheless boils down to a fundamental calculation. Calculation of eigenvectors, eigenvalues of the matrix. Let me give you one example just to keep your attention as we work through this, because today's lecture is pure linear algebra. But one example of a thing that you for example, an engineer is very interested in, maybe an automotive engineer, maybe sound eminently practical, is you're trying to balance an object. But what you try to do is you figure out what its natural axes of rotation are. If you have a symmetrical object, it will spin naturally around one axis or another. But when you have an irregularly shaped object, the point at which you can actually sort of spin it and have it balance just on your fingertip like a basketball, pretty easy, almost any point will work. But a less symmetrical object, it's hard to see where the natural balance point of that object is going to be. It turns out there's a matrix that you compute using three-dimensional coordinates, x, y, and z. You get an index for each of those coordinates. And what you can do is you can construct a moment of inertia matrix. It depends on, it'll be a 3x3 matrix where the three indices basically correspond to your three directions, natural directions, x, y, and z. That gives you a certain matrix, and when you count, there'll be certain vectors associated with that matrix. And those vectors are exactly the directions in which you'll have natural axis of rotation. That is, you can spin it, and the thing won't tumble. It'll just spin simply rather than sort of a compound motion. So that's one of the things you'll be able to find once you know how to compute eigenvectors and eigenvalues. There are other applications as well. Vectors are not necessarily directions in space, they could be functions. And for example, if you wanted to understand in chemistry why the hydrogen atom has s orbital electrons, p orbital electrons, etc., the explanation of the eventually the explanation of the periodic table, that also has to do with finding eigenvectors and eigenvalues. But now, not so much of a matrix, but of a differential operator, the one that corresponds to the energy. And in fact, the eigenvectors there are going to be the steady energy state of the atom. So, just to give you a picture of how diverse the next topic is going to be in its applications, today we'll just talk about how we frame the problem mathematically, and then how we solve it. So we begin with a simple mathematical equation called the eigenvector eigenvalue problem. The statement begins like this. You start from a square matrix, n by n matrix, and associated to this matrix are going to be certain numbers. I'll label them by lambda, but I'll call them eigenvalues. And there will also be certain vectors where the dimension of the vector is going to coincide with the row dimension of the original matrix. And what you want is for these vectors satisfy the following equation. Matrix multiplication by the matrix A is going to be equivalent to scalar multiplication of the same vector by the number lambda. So this calculation is really easy, right? Just multiply multiply every component of the vector b by the same number lambda. But the calculation on the right-hand side is more complicated. You have to take the dot product of each row of a with b, and then consolidate the result in a vector. So these are two different calculations. And what one demands when one has an eigenvector with eigenvalue lambda is that eigenvector b satisfies an equation like this. In fact, what we want is something a little bit more specific. Certainly, if I substitute zero, the zero vector for b on both sides, I get an identity. But it's sort of a trivial identity. Once you plug in the zero vector, the identity says zero is equal to zero. Because any matrix multiplying a zero vector is going to produce a zero vector. And any number multiplying the zero vector is going to produce a zero vector. So that's that case we're not interested in. It doesn't really provide us any condition. What we're interested in this eigenvector eigenvalue problem are non-zero vectors that satisfy an equation like this. If you could do that, we call the corresponding vector the eigenvector, and we call the corresponding number the eigenvalue. And each of these objects, the vector and the number, are going to be peculiar to the matrix A. So think of A as determining both the vectors and the numbers. All right, so let me give you an example. Here's a 2x2 matrix. Here's a 2x1 column vector. If I multiply the matrix multiplication, compute the result of multiplying A times B, I get a vector 4, 4, which, as you can see, is just the entries of the original vector multiplied by 4. So in fact, this is 4 times the original vector. And then you see that the this eigenvector eigenvalue problem is solved by this vector and the number 4. But it only works for 4, and it actually is only going to work for some multiple of this vector. All right, so that's the sort of situation we're going to try to replicate in today's lecture. So the important part right now is the fact that we are trying something that really shouldn't be possible, to replace matrix multiplication by scalar multiplication. The fact that we can actually solve this problem is for special values of lambda and special vector b is the point. All right, so let me give a little more nomenclature here. If we can solve the eigenvector eigenvalue problem, we'll call lambda the eigenvalue, b the eigenvector, and what's generally going to happen is that if you have one eigenvector of the matrix, you're going to have infinitely many eigenvectors. Because if you look at both sides of this equation, I could scalar multiply both sides of this equation by any number I want, and it would still be a valid equation. And that means that I can also absorb that scalar factor into B and get a different vector. So effectively, what happens here is if you have one vector B that satisfies this equation, every scalar multiple of that vector is also going to satisfy that equation. And so you have one non-zero solution to this, you're going to have infinitely many. What we do is collect together all the solutions of such an equation corresponding to a given eigenvalue. We call that the lambda eigenspace of the matrix A. So in this definition, when I say lambda is an eigenvalue, that means that there's at least one D that satisfies this equation with a given number lambda. What this definition does is it collects together, along with that one solution, all the other solutions that satisfy a similar equation with the same value lambda. All right, so now I'll show you how we solve such eigenvalue problem. The first thing we'll do is we'll take this defining condition, the condition that says that B is an eigenvalue of A, we find its value lambda, we rewrite this in more familiar terms. So I start off with this condition, just saying matrix multiplication is equivalent to scalar multiplication for these particular vectors and that particular number lambda. I take this term to the opposite side, then the point here is actually to think of B as a factor. And so what I do is I take the factor lambda times B and I insert the identity matrix. And now I have a matrix times B and another matrix times B that I consolidate into a single matrix times B. So here's the way we'll think about this condition. Closer to the form we've been dealing with matrix equations before. It's a simple linear system, right? A coefficient matrix times the vector is equal to zero. So it's in fact what we call in linear algebra a homogeneous linear system. A coefficient matrix times the vector of variables is equal to the zero vector. Homogeneous means the vector on the right hand side is actually the zero vector. All right, so what's going to happen here? Notice that the coefficient matrix here is not A itself, rather the shifted matrix. We call that lambda shifted matrix. I'll sometimes label this A subscript lambda, but all I mean is A minus lambda times I. Even that maybe disguises what it really is. If I have a matrix A equals 1, 2, 3, 4, then A minus lambda times I, well, I can write that down immediately. All this shift by lambda times the identity matrix, well, let's work it out. 1, 2, 3, 4 minus lambda times the identity matrix is lambda 0, 0, lambda. Then when I combine these guys, I get 1 minus lambda, 2, 3, 4 minus lambda. So all this matrix is, it's the original matrix A, where just along this main diagonal, from upper left to the lower right, I've shifted the entries by the amount lambda. All right, this turns out to be the relevant matrix for calculational purposes. So that's going to be a little bit confusing because I'll sometimes in this lecture be talking about solving linear systems where I just have a matrix times the vector is equal to zero. But oftentimes what's going to happen is the relevant coefficient matrix is not going to be the original matrix, but rather the shifted matrix. All right, so now in terms of this shifted matrix, the lambda eigenspace, set of all vectors with eigenvalue lambda, what that is just the null space of the shifted matrix. If you have a homogeneous linear system, if you have a coefficient matrix, let me use M, the solution set of, say, MX is equal to zero, is what we call the null space of the corresponding matrix. And we know all sorts of things about this because we've solved now homogeneous linear systems since the beginning of the semester. But what's relevant today is not the null space of A itself, but rather the null space of the shifted. All right, so what we're going to be looking for today is, first of all, the numbers lambda, for which this phase consists of vectors other than just the zero vector. Notice that the set certainly contains the zero vector as a solution. You substitute zero vector for B, both sides are going to evaluate the zero and the identity will hold. But what we're interested in here are non-zero vectors. Satisfy this equation. Okay, so first thing I'm going to show you is that this set, the set of vectors for which set of vectors V for which V is an eigenvalue of the matrix A with eigenvalue lambda, but that set is actually a subspace. Well, I've actually proved it already on this line, right? Because from our general theory of subspaces attached to a matrix, we know that one subspace is always the solution set of the homogeneous linear system you get using the given matrix as the coefficient matrix. So let me show you a little bit more directly that the eigenspace, the lambda eigenspace of the matrix A is a subspace. First of all, it's got to be closed under scalar multiplication. So if you have an eigenvector, meaning you have a vector, so B is eigenvector of a matrix A with eigenvalue lambda. If, first of all, B does not equal the zero vector, because that solution is too easy and it doesn't do us any good. And second of all, what you need is A minus lambda times I, B is equal to zero. It's got to live in the null space of this shifted matrix. All right, so these eigenspaces is for a given eigenvalue, the set of all vectors that have these two properties. Well, in fact, we delete this property because a subspace always has to have a zero vector. What we want is a subspace that's larger than just the zero vector. So, at any rate, this set is always closed under scalar multiplication because if B belongs to this eigenspace, it's going to be an eigenvector. And so, let's see, A applied to the scalar multiple of B. Scalar multiplication produced with the matrix multiplication, and then because B is assumed to be in the lambda eigenspace, matrix multiplication of B by A is going to just produce the scalar multiple of B by lambda. Then you reverse the order of these two factors, and you see that A times K times B is equal to lambda times K times B, which means that this factor, K times B, is also an eigenvector of A with eigenvalue lambda. And similarly, under vector addition, if I have two vectors that start off as eigenvectors, and I add them together, well, matrix multiplication distributes over vector addition. Because B1 and B2 are eigenvectors of A times B1 can be replaced by lambda times B1, and A times B2 can be replaced by lambda times B2. Call out the common factor of lambda, and you see that now B1 plus B2 is an eigenvector of A with eigenvalue lambda. All right, so the main object that we're going to compute here is actually not a particular eigenvector. The main object we're actually creating is a particular subspace. And it's these eigenspaces that we're trying to find. We don't want to explicitly write down every vector that sits inside a given subspace, because there is subspaces, even if it's only one-dimensional, it's going to be have input in many vectors, because a vector is in the subspace, so is every scalar multiple. If it's a non-zero vector, you can create infinitely many more vectors just by choosing different scalar multiples. Typically, what we're really interested in when we're trying to nail down what this eigenspace is we're just trying to find a basis for that eigenspace so that every other eigenvector can be written as a linear combination of the given basis vectors. All right, let's put those considerations aside for a minute and just try to figure out how we can actually find numbers lambda and vectors B that satisfy the eigenvector eigenvalue condition. So let A be an n by n matrix. call the eigenvector eigenvalue problem, the problem of finding all the numbers lambda and that will be eigenvalues of A and their associated eigenvalues. And that's going to occur, even as I stated, it is obviously there are two basic steps. First of all, you want to find the numbers lambda for which you can find solutions of such a system. It's going to turn out if you have an arbitrary number lambda here, you won't be able to find a non-zero vector that solves this problem. It's only going to be for special values of lambda that you'll actually have non-zero solutions. That'll become apparent in just a few slides. And then once you've figured out the numbers lambda for which you have non-trivial solutions, then figuring out what those solutions are, that's something we can already do. This condition here, the eigenvector condition, is equivalent to solving a homogeneous linear system. Once I replace this symbol lambda by an explicit number, what's in the parentheses here is just a numerical matrix. And so this just becomes a homogeneous linear system for which we can then identify the solution by taking this matrix, reducing your row echelon form, identifying three parameters and three variables and fixed variables, expanding your solution, all that crap. We'll do that, examples of this probably on Wednesday's lecture. Today, what we're going to focus on is just figuring out what numbers will work for us. So that's where we begin. We're going to try to find numbers lambda such that this equation has solutions where the vector v is not equal to zero. That's the only interesting case. And so this equation, we've already seen, can be rewritten in a form more familiar to us. A certain matrix times an unknown vector is equal to the zero vector, so-called homogeneous linear system. The x equals zero case is always going to be a solution, but it's the one we're not interested in. We'll call that a trivial solution, and we'll ignore it henceforth. What we're interested in are the non-trivial solutions of equations of this form. And so, the real question we have in identifying the eigenvalues of A is when do we have solutions of this equation other than x equals zero? All right, that seems kind of abstract. And at first glance, impossible to solve, but in fact, we have a theorem that will give us the solution. If you recall back, about the time of the first midterm, we were talking about finding the inverse of a matrix. And I stated the following fundamental theorem of invertible matrices. A matrix is going to have an inverse. Well, if A has an inverse, one consequence of that is that every linear system of this form has a unique solution. The way you get that is you use the inverse to multiply both sides by the inverse, and then you get x is equal to A to minus inverse times b. You can actually, once you know the inverse, you can immediately write down the solution of that equation. A particular equation of this form is the equation where Ax is equal to zero. If A has an inverse, this also has a unique solution, but you can observe that that unique solution has to coincide with x equals zero. And another equivalent condition is that the reduced row echelon form of the matrix is equal to the identity matrix. And yet another equivalent statement is the determinant of A is not equal to zero. So this was really the topic of last week, where I introduced the determinant as a way of checking to see whether or not a matrix has an inverse. All right, so what's relevant to the current problem is not the theorem directly, but rather the negation of this theorem. So because these statements are equivalent, either they're all true or they're all false. So what I'm going to do to get a condition where I assume that I have a solution other than x equals 0, is I'm just going to negate the whole theorem. So an equivalent what statement of this theorem would be that A doesn't have an inverse. Solution, linear systems of this form don't have unique solutions, that x equals 0 is not the only solution of this equation, that the neutral echelon form of A is not equal to the identity matrix, and the determinant of A is equal to 0. So, in particular, what I want to focus on is that we're looking for solutions that are of a linear system that are other than the trivial solution. And what we see is that's going to require that the determinant of the coefficient matrix has to equal 0. So that's what I state here. A homogeneous linear system, A times the vector x is equal to 0, is going to have solutions other than x equals 0 if and only if the determinant of the coefficient matrix vanishes. All right, so let's go back to the so-called eigenvector eigenvalue condition. This condition here is written, is stating the eigenvector eigenvalue condition as a statement about a homogeneous linear system. A coefficient matrix times an unknown vector is equal to something, a fixed vector on the right hand side. And what we conclude from the lemma or the corollary in the last prize is we're only going to have non-trivial solutions of this equation when the determinant of the matrix A minus lambda times I is 0. Okay, so we've calculated determinants. We know what they look like at the end of the calculation. They're basically polynomials in the entry of the matrix. So this condition here, it's going to be some polynomial in the entries of the corresponding matrix, so in particular, a polynomial in the parameter lambda. When we set a polynomial equal to 0, we get a polynomial equation. So in fact, the condition to find non-trivial solutions of an equation like this is going to be a polynomial equation in the parameter lambda. That means if we define for any matrix A, we establish this polynomial, the determinant of the shifted version of A, that this polynomial is actually going to tell us what the eigenvalues of A are, the number of lambda for which we have non-trivial solutions of the original homogeneous linear system. Recall, this is the characteristic polynomial of A, and we call the condition that polynomial vanishes, meaning that determinant vanishes, meaning that we have non-trivial solutions of the eigenvector eigenvalue problem. We call that the characteristic equation corresponding to the given matrix. Okay, so in summary, the way we're going to find the eigenvalues of an n by n matrix, the possible numbers lambda for which we can find vectors B satisfying these two conditions is going to be the roots of this polynomial equation. So the okay, so I guess I'm proceeding with here. I'm just repeating the definition. I'm sorry, my slides are a little messed up. So here I'm just repeating the definition. Here's a polynomial that we can construct by shifting the matrix along its main diagonal by a parameter lambda. We take that determinant, we get a polynomial of 3n, if n is a n by n matrix, and the roots of that polynomial, the solutions of p of a of lambda is equal to 0, those are going to be exactly our eigenvalues. All right, well, maybe things become clearer when we do an explicit example. Here's a 2x2 matrix. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to calculate this polynomial, the characteristic polynomial. So we start off writing it out in full form, A minus lambda times the identity matrix. You see what this additional matrix, which all it does to A is it just shifts the main diagonal entries by an amount negative lambda. But it's still a matrix, and even though this is a parameter rather than an explicit number, we can still compute this determinant using the difference of the diagonal products. And we get a polynomial. Here it is explicitly. And what we're actually interested in, if we want to find the eigenvalues of A, is what are the values of lambda that the P of A of lambda is equal to 0. Here you see that the only way P of A of lambda is equal to 0, you either have to have lambda equal to 4 or lambda equal to negative 2. So these two numbers, 4 and negative 2, are the eigenvalues of A. All right, now that's pretty easy for a 2 by 2 matrix because polynomial equations of degree 2 are pretty simple to solve. At the very least, if you had a polynomial equation of the form a lambda squared plus b lambda plus c is equal to 0, such a quadratic equation, these are always solvable using the quadratic formula. In general, you have two roots, or you have minus b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac divided by 2a. That's the so-called quadratic formula that you've known since high school, maybe even before. But unfortunately, when we look at a 3 by 3 matrix or a 4 by 4 matrix, that polynomial is no longer going to be of degree 2. It's going to be, its degree is going to be the same as the dimension of the matrix. So 4 by 4 matrix, the characteristic polynomial, corresponding polynomial is going to be of degree 4. And so how do you solve polynomial equations where the degree of the polynomial is greater than 2? Well, for that, you need to factorize. So from high school algebra, maybe not high school algebra, because the proper statement of the theorem, you have to leap up into the complex numbers. But the story is this. Anytime you have a polynomial with degree n, that polynomial is always going to be factorizable in terms of linear polynomials. What I mean by linear is simply degree 1 polynomial, x minus some number. It's degree 1 in x. Second factor is also degree 1 in x. All factors are degree 1 in the parameter x. That's called a complete factorization. Unfortunately, to get this factorization, even if you have a polynomial that consists of real numbers times powers of x, this factorization doesn't necessarily occur over the real numbers. Let me give you an example. If you take the polynomial p of x equals x squared plus 1, well, p of x equals 0, well, the only way that happens is when x squared is equal to negative 1, or x is equal to plus or minus the square root of negative 1 equals plus or minus 1. To solve, find the solutions of p of x is equal to 0, you have to do the complex numbers. You have to admit the complex numbers as part of your solution domain. But, nevertheless, this polynomial with real coefficients can be factorized. It's just that you have to factorize it using complex numbers as these offsets. So, nevertheless, this would really just be the statement that in order to solve polynomial equations, the real numbers are not sufficient, and sometimes you have to leap up into the complex numbers in order to find solutions. That's also going to be the case here when we try to find eigenvalues. Sometimes you can have eigenvalues of the matrix, solutions of polynomial equations that have complex roots. Like everything else in this course, we try to keep the computation simple. And so, just like I avoid using pi and square root of 2 and other things when I insert, you know, as entries of a matrix, just because it makes the computation more complicated, so too we'll try to avoid complex numbers in this discussion of eigenvectors and eigenvalues. Everything I say, though, it's true, whether we regard the underlying number field, whether we regard it as the real numbers or the complex numbers. It's just that occasionally you're going to run into polynomials in which the only roots of the corresponding polynomial equations are complex numbers. Since we're for the most part can avoid complex numbers in this course, I'll just try to avoid those kind of examples. If they do occur, all it really means is that the arithmetic that you perform, that you're doing row reduction, you still have to multiply rows and add them together, but the underlying arithmetic is going to be the arithmetic of complex numbers rather than the arithmetic of real numbers. But that's the only difference. But what I'm trying to say here, though, is that if I want to solve a polynomial equation, p of x equals 0, the way to do this in general is to find some factorization of the polynomial. And then once you have that factorization, you can read off from the factorization itself what the solutions are. In this case, it would be R1, R2, up to Rn. Okay, so now I can do a more complicated example, a 3x3 matrix, and we'll find all its eigenvalues. That means we're going to look at its characteristic polynomial. Pk lambda defined as the determinant of the shifted matrix. And so here's A, the matrix I've got inside the determinant. All the only thing I've done is I've, along this main diagonal, I've subtracted a parameter lambda. Now I can do a determinant calculation. What I've done here is cofactor expansion along the second row. More explicitly, what I did is I have along row 2. What I did is I had 0 minus 1 2 plus 1 times the determinant of what's the corresponding minor. I'm looking at this slot. I eliminate the row and column that contains, and I'm left with a matrix 1, 1, 1 minus lambda. But I don't actually have to compute this determinant because it's being multiplied by 2. And then I have a second term. The entry there is negative lambda. And then the sign is minus 1 to the 2 plus 2. And then the determinant of the corresponding minor. Eliminate the row and column corresponding to the 2 cube entry. And I'm left with 1 minus lambda, 1, 1 minus lambda. Then I have contribution to the third from the third element in that second row. It will be plus 1 times minus 1. 2 plus 3, determinant of the corresponding minor. That's exactly this. And so that's the usual computation of the determinant. As soon as you plug in and start calculating, you again see you get a polynomial. As predicted, since I started off with a 3x3 matrix, the characteristic polynomial is going to be a polynomial of degree 3. All right. So, how do we solve the equation P of A of lambda, being this polynomial, equals 0? Well, we'll factorize. Now, we're general cubic polynomials, it's not easy to find a factorization. You usually have to play around with it. For second order polynomials, you can often factorize it just by staring at it. But for this one, the simplest way to proceed is at least identify one factor. And so what I'm noticing here is that this third degree polynomial, every term has a factor of lambda. So lambda must be a factor, and that in particular means that lambda equals zero has to be a root. Indeed, if you substitute zero for lambda here, the right-hand side is going to evaluate to zero. Well, what I actually have then is a polynomial that's of third order, but it's a linear factor times a degree two polynomial. Now this guy, hopefully you guys can factorize this. Basically, lambda minus two times lambda plus one. So now I've achieved the full linear factorization of the characteristic polynomial for our matrix A. And the eigenvalues, we now can read off corresponding to this factor, zero. Think of this as lambda minus zero. Then corresponding to this factor, second eigenvalue, two. And corresponding to the last factor, the last root, lambda equal minus one. And so those are your three eigenvalues for the matrix A. All right, so summarize. Let's see. To solve the eigenvector eigenvalue problem, n by n matrix A, the first step is you find the eigenvalues. Now that step has two sub-steps. The first thing you do is you create or calculate the corresponding polynomial, A minus lambda times I. Then you factorize it into linear terms and grab the roots and grab the offsets. So it's going to be a lambda is going to look something like some overall coefficient. Then lambda minus R1, lambda minus R2, up to lambda minus Rn. You're going to have a total of n factors because for an n by n matrix, this polynomial is going to be a degree n. So you're going to need a total of n factors. These numbers, these offsets from the variable lambda, those are exactly the eigenvalues. All right, so you'll get a list of numbers that actually, for which you can deem the corresponding numbers as the eigenvalues of A. Complete the eigenvector eigenvalue problem. You also have to find the eigenvectors. And that's going to be done by choosing an eigenvector, forming this matrix. Once I choose a particular number, this becomes an explicit numerical matrix. And you simply solve the usual linear system. Take this matrix, row reduce it to row, reduce row echelon form, write down the corresponding equations, expand the solution in terms of the free variables, and those vectors that are being multiplied by the free parameters, those are exactly your eigenvalues. All right, so I'm going to stop here today, and on Wednesday, I'll complete this project with lots of examples. Solving eigenvector eigenvalue problem. This part is not the hard part because we're sort of familiar with it. But in combination with the problem of finding all the eigenvectors, we'll see that there's we get different kinds of solutions depending on the matrix A. Okay?